Hey, what's up? It's Ben Greenfield. I'm in the backwoods of Idaho, fly fishing with my kids. Hey, guys, say hi.
Hi.
Who are here? Behind me, texting emojis to mom. But I also have a fantastic, fantastic episode today. It's going to blow your mind. It's about cancer, and it's about my friend that cured himself of cancer. I think that's all I need to say, and you are really going to dig this one.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. Contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. Usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong is one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
sunlight to me is absolutely crucial. Without vitamin D, and that's the best source of it, your body cannot produce GCMAF, which is a regulatory protein that supports your immune system and activates macrophages. It's necessary for shutting down in those cells that could potentially become cancerous or they're no longer functioning the way they should.
It aligns all your priorities. Suddenly, what's important to you in life is clear. And it's not only clear, but you just don't accept any compromises.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I actually met today's podcast guest randomly at a party at this conference called Paleo FX in Austin, Texas. We were both at a party put on by my friend Abel James, also known as the Fat Burning Man online, and there were dozens and dozens of people, and I found myself standing in line at the food buffet with this guy who was basically telling me in gory, nitty-gritty detail about this smoothie recipe that he drinks each morning that basically made what I call my morning big-ass smoothie sound like a complete joke. I mean, this was like dozens and dozens of ingredients, superfoods, you name it, in his special morning blend. Now, I actually wound up publishing his entire shake online, and I'll link to that in the show notes here, and I'll give you the URL in the show notes for a moment. But then, by pure happenstance or coincidence or perhaps serendipity, I ran into this guy again down in Costa Rica just a couple of months ago. He attended a digital detox / yoga retreat that I found myself at down in Costa Rica. And I learned that he's a lot more than just a guy who likes to put a whole bunch of crap in a blender. He's actually a pretty serious biohacker and health enthusiast who's way on the cutting edge of everything from supplementation to health to nutrition to fitness and beyond. And he has actually cured himself of cancer. As a matter of fact, it was just after I met him at PaleoFX that he found out he had cancer, and he had spent the past several months leading up to when I ran into him a second time, literally turning his entire life around. He has an incredible story, so incredible, in fact, and it was a story I learned while I sat with him on a bus on the way to one of the adventures that we had down there in Costa Rica, that I just had to get him on the podcast to share his story with you. His name is Eric Remensberger. And Eric's been a practicing attorney for over 30 years, heading up a West Coast real estate practice near Santa Monica, California. But his health story is incredibly interesting, beginning when he was diagnosed last spring with stage 4 prostate cancer and what's called a Gleason score of 9, which he'll explain to us here shortly. But in terms of what he's done, how he's managed that, and how he's literally cured himself of it is incredibly fascinating. We're going to take a deep dive today into the science behind cancer, the various treatment protocols that he discovered,
and what he's learned along the way. So I think this is going to be really, really fascinating for you, really useful for you, and really relevant to you, especially if you or a loved one you know has had to deal with cancer. So, Eric, welcome to the show, man.
Well, thank you, Ben. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan and have been for a long time on my biohacking journey, as you say.
Yeah, and I failed to mention you're quite the yogi as well.
Thank you. It was fun, and I was very strategic when I grabbed that seat next to you on the bus, because I did want to tell you my story, because I think it is interesting, and it could be interesting for your listeners as well. But there's one thing I want to just kind of lay out initially when we kind of start this whole process, and that is I'm definitely in remission, and I'm happy to be in remission. But when people say cure cancer, I want people to be very clear. One of the things I discovered when I did the deep dive is that all of our bodies are producing potentially cancerous cells all the time. And so the difference between someone who is, as we say, suffering from cancer or a cancer patient and a person who's not is merely how their body is managing the disease. And we can talk a little bit about kind of how I ended up where I ended up when I first met you at the wine party across the street from PaleFX, and get into kind of how I found out about the cancer. I really want to talk about that. But I do want to be clear that I am now in a healthy state. So cancering to me is a verb, not a noun. Mm. Your body's either cancering or it's healing. What you want to do if you're suffering from cancer, which is a symptom of the disease, you want to try to get back to a healing state. And that's really what my journey was all about.
I don't think I've ever heard that term, cancering. Did you make that up?
Actually, it was a friend of mine, the doctor of Chinese medicine, who originally came up with the phrase, and I adopted it because it made so much perfect sense to me. And we're going to talk a little bit about kind of the energetic basis for cancer as a disease. And perhaps before we do that, I'll just kind of give a quick summary of, you know, my history of becoming a biohacker. Because when I met you at the event, I had already been kind of pretty deep down the road of trying to be as healthy as I possibly could for a period of almost 20 years. Prior to that, I had no interest in health, no interest in nutrition. I was a heavy cigarette smoker, heavy drinker, workaholic in New York. And really, my best exercise was going outside to have a cigarette because my wife wouldn't let me smoke in the house at the time. And that was really where I was. And it wasn't until I moved to Los Angeles, and I quit smoking before I came out here, but when I moved to Los Angeles in 1995, I started off kind of just as a gym rat. I got into this whole kick of trying to improve my physique and look better and have more energy. And so as part of my no longer smoking, as I started adopting a workout routine, which really didn't do much to change my physique a lot, but it did provide me with kind of a better sense of energy. And it was in 1995, about a year or two after I moved to Los Angeles, after I took the California bar exam, I decided I was going to take the hour and a half I had each and every day taken off to study for the bar and just use that time to really focus on my health.
Now, was that just because you felt crappy, or were you trying to get a six pack or just improve productivity? Or
it was both. It was both. It was my marriage. At the mother to my sons, that marriage was falling apart at the time. And I knew I was going to be back in the circulation and didn't want to look as ratty as I looked. But I also had just kind of a desire to kind of see if I couldn't get my body function better. So it was kind of a little of both.
Okay. Gotcha. So you kind of started down a hardcore health journey then, long before you found out you had cancer. You had really spent like the past 20 years beginning to delve into fitness.
Correct. That's right. And it really was my first exposure to alternative treatments, which happened a few years after that, when I was suffering some kind of chronic conditions. I had a chronic phlegm, you know, production of phlegm in my system, runny nose, cough. And I also would wake up several times in the middle of the evening to urinate. And both those conditions were just chronic for a long time. And so my allopathic doctors had done everything from chest x-rays to putting me on all sorts of pharmaceutical medications to try to address these conditions. Of course, none of them had even the slightest impact on the conditions. And then I got exposed to acupuncture, and that's really when my eyes got open to this concept that there might be some alternative to my theory on what makes for health. And that's when the deep dive started, and that was in 1997. And so from that point forward, I went through several different iterations. I adopted yoga, and I became an avid yogi. I continue to do other workouts as well. I went through several different diets, from kind of a vegan vegetarian diet to the raw primal diet that you may have heard about from a guy named Ajanas Vanaplan.
Well, are you talking about the raw primal diet, like the primal diet where you eat meat, like,
yes,
like raw chicken and
yes,
well, it's not just raw, it's raw everything, right?
Yes, yes. It's a primarily protein-based diet with a lot of animal fat, a lot of raw dairy, raw butter, raw everything, raw honey, raw meat. And I did that for a while. And then I moved into more of, I guess, what you call a paleo diet, which is where I was until early 2016, when I was kind of dabbling with ketosis. And so when I saw you, when I met you in May, I had already been kind of in a more strict ketogenic diet for about 5 or 6 months. And you saw my list of what ingredients I put in my daily shake. So you can see that.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to publish that. And by the way, if you're listening in right now, bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest to cure cancer. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest to cure cancer. I'll link over to my article about crazy exotic superfood cocktails and mind bending shake recipes and Eric's recipe in full, if you care to use the scrolling bar in your browser. A lot is in there.
Yeah. And there's going to be a lot on my site too. When we get to all of the protocols, you'll see I've taken that same obsessive compulsive disorder and applied it to trying to address cancer as a health condition. And it was interesting. It was literally that same weekend I met you in Austin, Texas, that I first started having symptoms of a disease. Up until that point in time, I hadn't seen a doctor except for, you know, I had a ski accident, had a dislocated shoulder, had to be fixed.
So at that point, you'd gone from cigarette smoking lawyer who had gotten a divorce to a 20-year health journey where you'd discovered things like Chinese acupuncture and superfoods to put in your smoothie, but you had no clue that as you were standing there at PaleoFX in line for food talking to me that you had cancer.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And it was actually that Sunday, the next morning, or maybe been 2 mornings after we met, I forget if we met on Friday or Saturday night, that I first started having difficulty urinating and my bladder had spasms. And I attributed that to, there was an electrostim machine that was demonstrated. I think you tried it out as well.
Yeah, that ARP wave that makes you feel like you've done 1,000 crunches shoved into 2 minutes.
Correct. And I had to put it on my abdominals and turn it up full blast. And I thought maybe that's what was causing my bladder spasms. Maybe I had short-circuited my nervous system somehow.
Yeah, I could see that.
I didn't really pay a lot of attention to it, but it was very uncomfortable. So when I got back to Los Angeles, about a week after I arrived back in LA, I went to see a doctor who I just dug up out of the Dr. Google referrals, because I hadn't seen a doctor in so many years. I didn't have one in the Rolodex. And he took some blood and he did a digital exam. And he obviously, we talked about my symptoms. And he said, if I were a betting man, I'd say you may have prostate cancer. You really should go see a urologist because your prostate feels quite large and unusual, is the word he used. And so I went to see a urologist who also did a digital exam and put me in his machine where he does ultrasound and said, this does not look good. Let's go ahead and run a battery of tests. So he immediately ran an MRI, a bone scan, a biopsy, all of this the entire time, Ben. I was under the impression that what I had was benign prostate hyperplasia, that they were wrong. I was way too healthy to have cancer. And I just would wait until the actual biopsy results came in before I really freaked out about what was going on. And I remember when the biopsy results came in, he actually called me at home. I was sitting at home watching television, trying to keep my mind off my condition. I generally don't watch TV, but he didn't candy coat it at all. He said, Eric, you have stage 4 prostate cancer, Gleason score 9. It's extremely aggressive. You need to see an oncologist as soon as you can.
So stage 4 Gleason score 9, that means that it's super aggressive.
Correct. And stage 4 just means that it's now it's outside of the prostate. It's affecting my lymph nodes, which in that groin area were all swollen and enlarged. And there was some evidence that it may be in the bones, also in that same groin area. And once it's outside of the prostate, your standard of care is limited because they won't do surgery, which I was kind of grateful for because I now have a normal prostate, normal-sized prostate, and normal-sized lymph nodes. So surgery wasn't even an option. But he did refer me to an oncologist. Of course, my initial reaction was complete shock, as you can imagine. I literally was kind of stunned and didn't know what to think. And really questioned a lot of what I'd been doing, you know, being organic and healthy. And
I mean, that's what, you know, all due respect, like you, I hear that quite a bit. You know, people say, Ben, you do all these things, you know, neurofeedback and superfoods and ketosis and a strict exercise program and foam rolling and massage. And, you know, what are you going to think if you're that guy who all of a sudden, you know, has a heart attack or gets cancer? Aren't you going to be kind of like a pie in my face type of example? And, you know, it sounds like you kind of had a similar process where it's like you were living very, very healthy. I mean, I saw your shake. It's not like you were mainlining fructose into your bloodstream, drinking, you know, 8 apples and 3 pears at, you know, from a Whole Foods juice bar. You were actually doing some things that were pretty advanced in terms of health and nutrition.
Exactly. And you saw me in my yoga pants too. I mean, for a guy who's 60 years old, I'm in great physical shape, right? And so I had no outward signs. There was nothing that I could point to.
Not that I make a habit out of sizing up guys in their yoga pants, just to clarify.
Yeah. So actually, when I finally came to grips with what I was confronting, I just decided that this was going to be my the rest of my life, really. I was going to take all of my passion, because really, up until that point in time, my passion really was wellness, that I'm using in the broadest possible sense of the word. But my, you know, I had this day job, which consumed most of my time, and then I had my social life, which consumed what was left. And so my passion really didn't have a chance to really manifest. And this, having been diagnosed with prostate cancer stage 4 Gleason 9, was such a wake up call that I just decided, look, I'm just going to do as deep a dive as I possibly can into this, into the disease, to the cause of the disease and what the treatment protocols look like. And I'm really fortunate because, you know, as an attorney who's a partner in a law firm, my partners were just absolutely supportive, as best partners you could possibly want. And they said, Eric, look, take whatever time you need. And really kind of focus your attention on your disease, and we'll just cover your back for you here at the office. And so I was able to kind of really just jump in with both feet and do a very, very deep dive. And I really wanted to get to the bottom of what the cause might be, because I felt if I didn't really understand the cause, and obviously everything I'm talking about here is theoretical, and my standard disclaimer is I'm not a doctor and I can't give medical advice and I don't purport to, but
right. But at the same time, the cool thing that I've discovered is that because you're not a doctor, you can actually talk about some pretty fringe health concepts without you knowing this as an attorney, the risk of some of the litigiousness that doctors would have to face if they did say some things.
And we're going to get into some fringe things here as well, I'm sure, on this podcast.
Yeah.
But it seemed to me it didn't make a lot of sense to decide what the right protocol was until I understood exactly what I was dealing with. Otherwise, I was just kind of following someone else's theory and not my own. And, you know, what we talked about when we rode on the bus is the energetic cause of cancer. I'm going to get into that. But before I do that, what I'd like to do is just kind of lay out as briefly as I can. The science here is pretty deep. And I don't want to take up too much of the podcast on that. But as I'm sure your listeners know, because this is nothing new for those that really want to be good biohackers, there are kind of two primary views as to what cancer results from. And again, I think cancer is a symptom of a disease, not a cause of a disease. And when we get to the roots of the problem, we'll see that. One is that it's a defect in DNA replication, or a genetic mutation cause theory.
That's the first theory of cancer, is that DNA is mutated.
Correct. And that's what most standard of care is focused upon, although it doesn't really understand, has not been able to really decipher a particular genetic cause, and therefore it just uses the same kind of scorched earth policy that medicine has been using for 70 or 80 years. ever since they first discovered that mustard gas could affect bone cancer. And so that's the one theory. And the second theory, which was, your listeners probably know this, so I don't need to go too far into it, but Otto Warburg, a Nobel laureate, discovered pretty early in the 19th century, and I think it was in 1928, he came to this theory that cancer was a metabolic disease. Mm-hmm. That it was an inability of cancer cells to respirate properly that caused them to convert to fermentation as their energy source, burning high amounts of glucose. And therefore, the problem lie within the metabolic system. He wasn't aware, obviously, of the mitochondria, because we hadn't discovered the mitochondria then. And we have since. And, you know, that has kind of, I think, added additional credence to his theory, although it wasn't necessarily, you know, he didn't get into the weeds on it.
Yeah. And actually, I have a whole podcast called Why You've Been Lied to Cancer and What You Can Do About It, where I interview Dr. David Minkoff. And we talk about this entire book, Tripping Over the Truth, The Metabolic Theory of Cancer. And it gets into that, how cancer is technically an issue with your mitochondria going into a state of constant glycolysis and just churning out tons of lactic acid with a complete inability to be able to metabolize any fuel other than glucose. And that's one of the main reasons for cancer, rather than it being a pure issue of just DNA mutation.
Right. And a good plug here for Travis Christofferson, who wrote that book, is for those of you who really want to understand the history of cancer in our, you know, current iteration, kind of how we went through the whole DNA process, studying DNA as the cause of cancer and the medical result of that, and also the Warburg theory and where that is today. I think his book is the best book on that, bar none.
The Tripping Over the Truth book?
Yeah, exactly. And here's an interesting little anecdotal point, Ben. I have interviewed and talked to no less than 12 different specialists, cancer specialists, oncologists, radiologists, urologists, doctors who specialize in cancer, and only two of them actually even were aware of that book.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
It's so good, because that book, I mean, I'll tell some people who, you know, they'll write into the podcast or they'll write into me or to the support for the website and ask about my top recommendation for managing cancer or for, you know, quote, curing, unquote, cancer. And I recommended them, even if they don't read all the science, you know, the nitty gritty of the science in that book, which is also excellent, to just flip to the end of the book where there's an entire extremely practical section on healing your mitochondria and on, you know, a diet for managing cancer and all the things that I say that I would do if I found out, like you did, that I had cancer. One of the very first things I would do is I would grab that book and just start to follow everything in the back of that book.
Yes. And I think I read 14 books in 21 days after I got diagnosed. I really just, and some of them were really useful and some of them not so much. But that was one that I thought really kind of struck a chord with me, kind of fit into what I was seeing as patterns within all the noise.
Right.
And in the book, obviously, he points out that Pete Peterson is the guy who first kind of came to the conclusion that the process with fermentation was really correlated with defective mitochondria. And a lot of the healing protocols that I have adopted really focus upon strengthening as best you can the mitochondria in your healthy cells, and then obviously weakening as best you can your cancer cells. And before we get into those protocols, it might be kind of fun to talk a little bit about this whole energetic cause, because it seems to me,
I do want to, sorry to interrupt. I do want to talk about that, because that really is, you know, during the discussion that I had with you on the bus, one of the really profound things that you mentioned that I think isn't discussed enough when people talk about cancer. They talk about some of the things you just harped on, right? Like the metabolic theory of cancer versus DNA mutating, you know, what's happening on a scientific level. But when you look at, for example, you know, Chinese medicine, you hear or see talk about, like, you know, bone cancer being an issue with, like, built up years of anger or bitterness in one's body from an emotional standpoint. You see, you know, suppression of certain thoughts or feelings as potentially being another reason that that cancer or the potential for cancer might build up within the body. And you had a really interesting take and insight on this whole link between emotions and cancer. So, yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Sure. And it's kind of a nice segue to that. I think, you know, this whole Warburg theory and the mitochondrial defect theory are really, really helpful, but they don't really tell you how it is that a healthy cell, because cancer cells are not cells that are outside our body that suddenly get found within our body. They're cells within our body that convert from its normal form of respiration into this process of fermentation and proliferation. And so what is it that causes an otherwise healthy cell to decide to start using fermentation as its energy pathway rather than normal respiration, burning of oxygen? And traditional Chinese medicine has this concept of qi. It's capital Q-I, but it's pronounced qi, like C-H-I. And, you know, those who are familiar with Chinese medicine know that most Chinese medicine practitioners will manipulate this energy flow by taking pins and fine needles and putting them in these acupuncture points, these meridians in the body. But the actual qi itself, as it's understood by Chinese, traditional Chinese medicine, again, this is not my area of expertise. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just kind of basing it on my best understanding of it, is means life force energy.
Yeah.
In other words, it refers to all functions in the body and the mind, not just this meridian pathway, which is just the one that they can manipulate.
Right. It's more or less like the breath of life is one way that it's described. And not to derail your thought pattern too much, I don't know if I told you this, but my entire business that about the time this podcast comes out, most folks are going to know this anyways. My entire new business that, you know, I'm rebranding Greenfield Fitness Systems and Ben Greenfield Fitness and everything that I'm doing. And the entire focus of the business is complete integration of mind, body, and spirit health. But I've taken a deep dive into qi over the past several months, just studying and learning how to optimize mind, body, and spirit using this concept of energy flow and optimizations of one's, not only one's chakras, but one's meridians, et cetera. And so, yeah, this is very relevant to me at the time.
Right. And so, you know, from those studies, I'm sure you're well aware that it's really kind of, you can have an excess of energy, you can have a insufficiency, and you can have stagnation. It's the stagnation, that concept is the one that I think is the one I want to spend a minute or two on, because in my view, it's that stagnation that kind of triggers this difficulty in the cellular level for respiratory function. And in my case, it's really, really obvious, is to me anyway. And again, I'm just speaking from my own experience. I couldn't point to any scientific evidence of this, that what caused my development of cancer really was in large part, there are some other issues we're going to talk about, we talk about the protocols, but in large part, the result of the fact that I had this a tremendous amount of stagnation in my root chakra, which is the mm-hmm. which is where the prostate is located. And the prostate organ and the root chakra are both kind of the centers of procreative and protocreative energy, right?
Procreative and what energy?
And protocreative creativity. It's okay. You know, your desire to get out and conquer the world. They both come from the same impulse.
So basically, like, sex and creativity would be the two things associated with the root chakra.
Correct. And I'm talking about creativity as a drive kind of thing, right? It's that underlying drive that causes you to want to get out and get into the world and create things and do things. And both of those, for me, if I look back about 4 years prior to having been diagnosed with prostate cancer, I was in a stagnant place in both those areas of my life for about 3 years. I mean, just completely stagnated to the point where it was, even though I was outwardly physically very healthy, I hadn't had sex in 3 or 4 years.
Was that when you were married or you were divorced?
No, I'm separated from my wife now, but she and I were married at the time. But, you know, we had gone through a separation prior to that because I had stepped out of the marriage and done things I shouldn't have done. And I really wanted to redeem myself. And I just decided that I really wanted to focus on other things, and sex wasn't that important. And I just kind of just shut that whole thing down, which was really.
Did she know that? Was that like something else that you were like hiding from her, or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too personal because obviously she's going to be listening to this podcast and as others will too that I know. But yeah, it was. I mean, neither of us were having sex for that period of time for all sorts of reasons. And I was also, I don't want to focus on the cause of that, but that was kind of that created stagnation within that kind of energetic flow. And in addition, right. I was really wanting to move into health and wellness and out of the practice of law, even though I do love my job because I do it well and I've been doing it a long time. It's a lot of fun, but it wasn't my passion. And here I was in my 50s thinking about what I want to do with my life. But I couldn't pull the trigger. I couldn't get out of that kind of, I want to do it, but I can't even take the first step to making it happen. And I got a bunch of URLs and I came up with all sorts of ideas and how I could create some new kind of program that dealt with nutrition or advice or whatever. But none of it really hit me as being kind of all that important or strong enough didn't inspire that impulse in a way that was strong enough to make me take the step.
But it was almost like you knew deep down inside that you wanted to do something and you weren't allowing yourself to do it.
Exactly.
In terms of like shifting to a different career that
exactly.
you felt called to.
Exactly. I was too comfortable. And yeah,
I hear that a lot. I mean, I've talked to so many, especially older people who have warned me or have written in books or articles about how the one thing that they wish that they would have done would have been to explore something that they were extremely attracted to when they were younger, but just like kept pushing away and pushing away and pushing away. And eventually they found it was too late. I mean, it's why, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to play open mic night on a Tuesday night at a local place here in Spokane, because I've always wanted to get up on stage and play my guitar and my ukulele. And it's why I'm putting the finishing touches on my fiction book right now. Cause I've always wanted to write a fantasy fiction book and I'm trying to, and I'm totally not trying to like rub this in your face and say, you know, haha, I went out and satisfied my creative outlet, but I'm pointing out the fact that, man, I think it really is one of the things you hear the most in terms of like regrets people have on their deathbed is that they didn't go out and do the things that they felt really like called to or attracted to when they were younger.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think your job, what you do for a living, I think has, and I'm projecting, please forgive me for doing this, but you actually, I think there's a lot of passion for what you do, which is why you do it as well as you do it. And
yeah, but at the same time, like what I do, you know, podcasting and blogging and doing like the whole fitness and nutrition and biohacking thing, uh-huh. it's not, I'm called or extremely attracted to what I loved to do when right. I was a kid, which was read and write and geek out, which I'm doing now. That is my job. But then the other two things that I really loved was music/singing/acting, just like doing that whole performance thing. And then writing and writing fiction particularly. And so right. I'm trying not to neglect those things as I grow older.
No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. And I feel blessed that I actually, it's kind of sounds odd to say this, but in hindsight, it's not so difficult to say, is, you know, this whole shift in my journey has been a blessing because it really has it. And for those who may have had a similar experience, I'd love for them to kind of to reach out to me, but it aligns all your priorities. Suddenly what's important to you in life is clear, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not only clear, but you just don't accept any compromises in that. When prior to that diagnosis, I was, you know, doing a lot of kind of monkey motion where I was kind of, you know, I had some priorities and I do them as best I could, but I would center myself or I would do things I really wasn't passionate about, or I'd spend time letting people abuse me, whatever it was.
Right.
I didn't have that experience. And once you've had that experience and your priorities get lined up, boy, life just becomes an absolute joy. It really does. And it's unfortunate that I had it now rather than later. I wish I had it earlier, but I don't know if I would have actually been able to bring all the that I can bring to the table now if I hadn't kind of gone through what I went through. Right. So
right.
the fact that I had to wait till I was 59 years old to get diagnosed with cancer may not be a bad thing, because it really gave me kind of a really good foundation to do this deep dive.
Hey, you want to spice things up in the bedroom and boost your sexual performance and do it naturally without nasty prescription drugs? You gotta check out this stuff, Joy Mode. It's a powder. You can put it in water, or if you're like me and you're a savage, you can dry powder into your mouth. It contains clinically supported doses of L-citrulline, arginine, yohimbine, and vitamin C. So after taking this stuff called their Sexual Performance Booster, again, by Joy Mode, your blood levels of arginine and yohimbine increase, and that directly promotes nitric oxide production, penile tissue relaxation, and increased drive. Well, the antioxidant action of vitamin C protects the nitric oxide from oxidative degradation, which then enhances the blood flow promoting activity of the nitric oxide. They thought of everything. They're super smart over at Joy Mode, and collectively these effects enhance sex drive and blood flow naturally to the penis or to the clitoris. My wife takes it too. It's amazing. You get better orgasms, better blood flow. You can kiss nasty prescription medications goodbye and have natural guilt-free energy for boosting your sexual performance. You can get 20% off your first order from Joy Mode. How? Go to usejoymode.com/greenfield. That's usejoymode.com/greenfield. J-O-Y. usejoymode.com/greenfield. They'll give you 20% off your first order. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life, you don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Okay, so you were getting into the stagnation thing and right. the emotional causes of cancer.
Correct. And I also looked at the work of a guy named Wilhelm Reich, which we don't need to get into deep on that. But he also looked at life force. But he looked at it as a scientist, not as a doctor of Chinese medicine. He found life force. He actually found it at a really high level of magnification in the microscope. where he could see how from innate matter, life forms would get formed. And he called there were two forms. There was the PA group, which he called the orgone life form. And then there was the T bions. They're both bions, PA bions and T bions. The T he also called T bacilli. And that was a life form that kind of
involved. But did you say biomes or bions?
B-I-O-N, like Nancy S, bions. Okay. And the T bacilli was kind of a biological energy that allowed for the putrefaction or you know degeneration of other forms. And the PA group, the positive, was where light was, where you could see growth and life. And that's and so his whole, you know, he got really deep into the science. And I'm going to touch on some of this on my site because it's quite fascinating. But he said all life process comes from this kind of biological pulsation or alternation of contraction and expansion, which you find in everything from single cell organisms to the plasma of the blood, to the intestines, to the autonomic nervous system, the cardiovascular system. And anytime there's insufficient respiration, the biological weakness results in kind of being vulnerable to this T bion or the T bacilli, which is where, and so he really kind of agreed with Warburg that a cancer cell is a different metabolic pathway due to oxygen deficiency. But he said it was the result of, he found this kind of protozoal formation that happens, that actually occurs once the autonomic nervous system ceases to function as it should. And that's what he really did his deep dive in. And so I found his work to be fascinating because it kind of, it, to me, they both tied into the same thing, which is this suffocation of the cell nuclei or the inability of the mitochondria to function the way it should at the biological level. So I really get into that. And then I try to apply all this to my own experiences and say, okay, where was I during that period of time when this cancer was developing in my system I was completely unaware of? And it was when I was completely stagnated and I really didn't have that kind of that I don't know, it's going to sound a little hokey, but that joy you have when you get out of bed in the morning, just want to get out and enjoy life. And so if you kind of look at it at that level, it all kind of fits together. And I wanted to be able to have, you know, as an attorney, I look at context. I wanted to be able to see how all these pieces could actually all fit together. I do think there's a genetic mutation issue with cancer, but I don't think it's the cause. I think it's the effect. And it may happen very early in the process when these cells first go through the process of not respirating the way they should. That's when the genetic defects occur. But again, the genetic defects may help facilitate the spread and growth of the disease, but they don't necessarily cause the disease.
So what you're saying is that the issue with mitochondrial respiration, which is described in the book Tripping Over the Truth, is preceded by like a stagnation of ki due to some of the emotional issues that, for example, Wilhelm Reich discovered in some of his experiments.
Exactly.
Okay. And by the way, for those of you listening in, I know of a couple of books by Wilhelm Reich, the cancer, I think the cancer biopathy is one.
Yes, that's
and then
one.
he has another book where he just talks about all his bion experiments that he did. I'll hunt those down and link to them in the show notes over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest-to-cure-cancer if you want to take a deeper dive into that stuff. But it makes sense, right? Like you mess things up emotionally, you stagnate your body, and then it sounds like, Eric, what you're saying is because of that, that's when you like start the dominoes falling in terms of the issues with mitochondrial respiration. Although I should throw in there, and I don't know what you think about this, that's not to say that there aren't a lot of other crappy things you can do when it comes to setting up yourself for poor mitochondrial function, right?
High
amounts of oxidation from a lot of sugar consumption or huge amounts of exposure to Wi-Fi and electrical signals. And, you know, there's a lot that goes on there with mitochondria. And I had a really interesting podcast with Dr. Mercola, and he actually has a new book coming out where he talks a lot about mitochondrial health. And I'll link to my previous podcast with him, but it's not as though you can be, like a happy-go-lucky, let's say, pastor's kid with perfect emotions and a wonderful outlook on life. But, you know, eat Twinkies and sit in front of a Wi-Fi router all day long, you could still have some pretty crappy mitochondria, right?
I think that's right. I don't mean to suggest that every form of cancer is all caused by this, but I would imagine, and I'm just venturing a guess, that a large percentage of them are.
Right.
Okay? Because to me, in my view, our bodies are designed to heal themselves. And this is part of traditional Chinese medicine. And most illnesses are caused by these blockages that are created either physically or emotionally or both. Usually they're tied together. Mm-hmm. But you have a certain amount of stressors that you're going to be confronting day to day. And, you know, the body can handle them as long as you don't exceed the capacity of your stressors, unless you have a weak genetic link and those stressors overwhelm your body. And I think what you're referring to about sugar and sitting in front of the TV or next to a Wi-Fi machine, all these things are stressors on the body. You know, just sitting in traffic, listening to the news is a stressor on the body. These are all things that eventually accumulate to the point where your body's going to start to break down. And so the inability of the mitochondria to function could definitely be caused, no question about it, by, you know, environmental toxins, not just emotional toxins. But I would say, and I think I feel pretty strongly this way, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Ben, is that you would be much healthier, although you may not look great, if you had really kind of good, healthy relationships in your life, you had strong passion, good purpose, you had good sleep, you know, you really lived a life where you just didn't have the emotional stress. And you could eat McDonald's every day and you could drink Coca-Cola and you're not going to look great, but it's not necessarily going to kill you. You could have the person like me who, and I'm an example of this, who, you know, has been eating organic and, you know, hadn't smoked since 1992 and, you know, was very only clean water, nothing, you know, I wouldn't drink coffee unless it was organic. I wouldn't eat meat unless it was grass fed, all these healthy things. I was a vegetarian for a while. But if I didn't have that kind of passion, purpose, healthy relationship, stress management part of my life, I'm still going to have a breakdown. My body's still going to suffer a breakdown. So I'm saying that as between those two, the foundational principle, as I call it, when they get into my protocols, stress management.
Yeah. And to touch on that, there's a really good book I just finished called Surrender, the Pathway or Letting Go, the Pathway of Surrender. By David Hawkins. And in that book, and also in another really good book called The Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton, they go into the fact that even more important than like eating healthy and exercising is your emotional outlook on your health and how you can believe yourself into a state of sickness, even if you're a healthy person. And at the same time, if you're an unhealthy person, you know, eating deep fried Twinkies, you can, as silly as this may seem, if you really are convinced that your body is able to process that and deal with that and heal itself, you're actually at lower risk for that causing issues. I know there's a whole bunch of scientists and nutritionists laughing their asses off right now, but it really is something that I'm convinced of, that you can make yourself somewhat more bulletproof to a lot of the modern assailants or a lot of the unhealthy things that you expose your body to. If you're simply of the belief that your body is a pretty cool machine that is able to withstand a lot of those stressors versus you being the orthorexic person who wants to live life in a bubble, who freaks out when, say, like a molecule of mercury touches your food and all of a sudden believes that you're going to get Mad Hatter's disease, like you probably are much more likely to than if you believe that your body was going to be able to deal with that toxin, process it, remove it, and move on. So it's an interesting concept, but it makes sense to me, and I really do think that's something that a lot more people, especially in our orthorexic health sphere, should be a little bit more aware of.
Yeah, and to those scientists that would scoff at you, Ben, for saying that, I would merely point to the placebo and the nocebo effect, which I don't think anybody who does a deep dive into kind of an impact of nutritional intervention can ignore how effective those two things can be in the outcome. So clearly that's supportive of what you just referenced in those books.
Yeah.
And so the very first thing I did, and it's interesting how I ended up stumbling upon this as my first protocol, is I did an 8-day water fast. The reason I did that is because I originally wanted to do a cleanse.
Was this like a week after, or like right after? Or when did in relation to us meeting at PaleoFX, when did you do the water fast?
I didn't actually know I had cancer until July 20th. So it was about a month and a week or two after I met you. Because after I had all the battery of tests, and I actually had a CT scan from my oncologist and et cetera. And so it was literally, I think I started the water fast I actually started the water fast before I had these tests. I started the water fast, I think it was probably the first or second week of June. So it was probably a week or two after I met you. And the reason I did that is because I decided I really just wanted to do a cleanse initially. And I had been reading a book, one of the first books I read, which I don't recommend it all that highly. But in that book, they talk about doing this cleanse that involves cayenne pepper, lemon juice, and maple syrup, grade C maple syrup, which you can't buy anymore.
That cleanse isn't that the master cleanse?
Yeah, it's a master cleanse. And I literally did, you know, half a day of that, and I just went into sugar shock. And I said, this is definitely not going to work for me. My body's just freaking out here.
It's kind of funny how it's called a fast, but you're eating like 1,200 calories of maple syrup a day and mainlining sugar into your bloodstream.
Exactly. And I felt, okay, this is not going to work. And so I decided I was just going to do a water fast. And I was going to do a 10-day water fast. But after day eight, my body said, okay, it's time to eat. But I'm convinced that that was a smart thing to do in hindsight, because I also decided to move my ketogenic from, you know, nutritional ketosis to therapeutic ketosis, which is a much higher level of ketosis. And that's kind of where I started. All my protocols kind of started there.
So if nutritional ketosis is like, is what, 1.0 or so? Is therapeutic above 3?
Yeah, nutritional 0.5. Technically, if you're 0.5, you're in ketosis. Therapeutic, you have to be over 2.0.
Okay.
And hopefully higher than that, 3 and 4.
And therapeutic would be more along the lines of what you'd want to use to manage disease.
Correct. Correct. But I'd like to take a little sidebar if I can here, because in my studies, I also stumbled upon, of course, the whole Gerson therapy. And, you know, this plant-based diet as a therapeutic way of addressing cancer. And it's hard to ignore the anecdotal results from that therapy. And so I was trying to reconcile the two, because I knew ketogenic was extremely effective and it fit within my theory about cancer with the mitochondria and not having glucose in your system, et cetera. So I thought to myself, how could this make, you know, how are both these diets equally effective in addressing cancer? And I could talk briefly on how my diet has evolved to where it is today. But I was at the Metabolic Therapeutics Conference in Tampa, Florida, early of the first week of February. And I met a Dr. Q Collins there from its signature. It's like Cigna Health.
What's his name?
Dr. Q Collins. And they're looking into deuterium depletion. I don't know if you're even aware of what deuterium is. It's also called heavy hydrogen. I don't want to spend a ton of time on this, but I was fascinated by it because deuterium is in the atmosphere. It's like 0.015% of what's out there is hydrogen. It's a heavy form of hydrogen in the atmosphere. But hydrogen is crucial for the functioning of the mitochondria, the conversion the creation of ADP. I don't want to go through the whole process. I couldn't if I wanted. And what they're discovering is that by depleting deuterium, you can actually help affect the outcomes in any illness that's fostered by poor mitochondrial function, including cancer. And I was talking to Dr. Q, and I said, could you please help me understand how it is that if I eat a ton of vegetables, I get good results. If I eat a ton of fat, I get good results. These are, you know, the ketogenic diet and the Gerson therapy, although Gerson does have too much carbohydrates, but they both seem to be very effective. And he said, yeah, because they both are deuterium depletion diets. They're both diets that will reduce the amount of deuterium in your system. And it doesn't take much. I mean, you could drink low deuterium water, and your normal ratio of hydrogen to deuterium, or deuterium to hydrogen, for example, is one deuterium molecule for every 6,472 normal hydrogen molecules. And all you need to do to get a therapeutic benefit is to drop that from 1 to 6,418 or something like that. So, you know, based on the science, as we know it, this is brand new science, both of those diets seem to have the same kind of therapeutic effect. And so my diet, as you might imagine, has turned into this kind of heavily plant-based ketogenic diet. I do have animal protein, but I use it selectively for nutritional value. And just, you know, my protein levels are whatever my body needs to maintain muscle mass and functionality.
Yeah, and you stick to it pretty well, by the way, because we had some freaking awesome bomb buffets there in Costa Rica. And I remember you were walking around, I think, one night with like a plate full of nuts while everybody else was just like geeking out on freaking, like, you know, pork tacos and corn and mangoes and all this jazz. And you're just standing there, you know, notch on nuts. The deuterium depleted water, though, that makes sense what you're saying about the deuterium to proton ratio and kind of like adjusting those concentrations within the body to allow for better mitochondrial function. But where the heck do you get this deuterium depleted water?
Well, I'm actually helping the folks at Signature Health. They're going to try to get it imported here in the United States. It's manufactured, I think, somewhere in Eastern Europe today. And I'm not, I don't know enough about it to even recommend it, but I do think that, you know, diet is important as part of the elements of the protocol, in addition to this whole stress management. And I also want to touch briefly, if I can, too, on detoxification, because and I'm talking about emotional stuff, which we talked about, and environmental detoxification. There is clearly a correlation between cancer and fungus growth. And I think it's a result of the creation of the lactic acid, lactate. And so I'm told by more than one integrative doctor that anybody who has cancer below the diaphragm, which clearly prostate cancer, ovary cancer, these are all diet cancers, colon cancers, are the cancer, should be taking nystatin for the rest of their life. These are doctors that don't prescribe prescription drugs, or you can use their other methods, SCIT, their other methods of addressing fungus.
You mean nystatin, like the antifungal medication?
Yes, yes. That's the only pharmaceutical drug I'm currently taking. There are other ways of addressing it, but detoxification, I think, is the first step once you get before you get into nutrition.
Is that because a fungal infection can affect the health of the mitochondria?
I think it affects the ability of your healthy cells to fend off the cancer production.
Okay. So even if you don't have like a candida or a yeast or a fungal infection, when you have cancer, you're still recommending that people look into the use of something like nystatin?
Correct. And again, I'm not a doctor, but please talk to your doctor about it. See if your doctor.
Notice agrees. How I phrased that very carefully. I didn't see you prescribing.
No, I wouldn't even purport to do that. And another major component, I think, which if you look at kind of the whole metabolic process that leads to cancer, is what I call oxygenation, which is kind of a broad-based component of the protocols. It covers a lot of different things. If you've been following the works of Dom DiAgostino and Tom Seyfried and some of the others who are really focused on cancer as a metabolic disease, they generally will recommend hyperbaric oxygen therapy as a therapy for cancer. And I think based on the research that I've done, it's incumbent on anybody who's struggling with the potential of metastases or cancer spreading should absolutely be doing hyperbaric treatment. Because what it does is it forces oxygen throughout your system, and you want to get as much oxygenation as you can. And there are other things you can do that. But back in 1980, there was a study done that showed that if you get exposed to ozone, which is another treatment I do, at as little as 0.8 parts per million, that it reduced cancer cell growth by about 90%. Because cancers don't have the ability to defend against ozone. But healthy cells.
Can you explain to people listening in how concentrating oxygen in something like a hyperbaric chamber and also exposing cells to ozone would affect cancer?
Sure. And again, I'm not a scientist. I'm an attorney, so I'm just looking at context and reading other people's studies. But cancer is unable to burn oxygen. We know that. That's the Warburg theory. So it is unable to respirate oxygen. So in the presence of oxygen, it doesn't have any oxygen in and of itself doesn't have any kind of therapeutic benefit to cancer as to help it, you know, continue to proliferate. However, all of the surrounding cells within the region where the cancer is do have and thrive on access to oxygen. And I'm just now reading a book that I think you recommended in one of your podcasts called The Oxygen Advantage. I'm about halfway through it. And this really doesn't get so much into exactly what I'm talking about here, but he talks a lot about the importance of carbon dioxide in the process of assimilating oxygen into our cells. And I think the assimilation of oxygen into our cells is part of what strengthens our cells. So this goes back to the original premise that you want to look at cancer not as necessarily some external disease that somehow grows in your system, but a bunch of cells in your system that haven't been addressed properly, right? Apoptosis didn't step in when it should have and shut them down for whatever reason. And now, due to lack of oxygen, they're starting to burn energy through the fermentation process. And so what you want to do is almost, this is going to sound, I think people are going to probably choke on it when I say it, if they're cancer doctors, but you almost want to take these cancer cells and convert them back into healthy cells. And I'm convinced you can do that depending on where they are in the cancer process, how far along they are in the cancer process. If they're completely shot, you're not going to do that. But if they're early in that process where they're just initiating this change in production, you can actually do that. And you do that through introducing oxygen into their universe, into their little cellular world.
And how would the oxygen do that? How would it convert it back into a healthy cell?
Well, it just allows the cells to, I think, adopt their original before the conversion process of the original metabolic pathway before they convert it over to fermentation.
So it allows a cell to begin to produce energy via the use of oxygen rather than to produce energy aerobically and produce lactic acid.
Correct.
Okay.
So that's, I think, why cancer always thrives better in when there's less oxygen and does a lot worse when there is, which is why hyperbaric oxygen as a treatment has shown to be so effective. There was a gentleman I met when I was in Tampa who had glioblastoma and actually had the tumor removed from his brain. And he was doing the ketogenic diet. And he was doing a lot of kind of alternative therapies. And he was also, I think, doing some standard of care. But when he did the MRI, it showed that he still had, it showed that he was completely cancer-free. But when he did a thermal imaging picture of his brain, where they look at kind of this conversion into these new cells based on, I guess, the temperature of the cells, they discovered that he still had cancer cells throughout his brain. It had kind of dispersed before he had the surgery. And so he did hyperbaric oxygen, and it completely shut that down. So now, even in a thermal imaging scan, it shows absolutely no cancer whatsoever. And so that's pretty powerful. And it was hyperbaric is the only thing he changed.
Did he do the ozone therapy as well?
You know, he probably did, although I didn't discuss that with him directly. I do ozone. I do it, I think, the way you do it, although I do it every day. You know what I mean? You might do it daily, but I do rectal insufflation ozone as a daily treatment.
That you need a machine to actually make ozone to do rectal ozone therapy, right?
Correct.
Because I have a countertop water ozonator. And usually what I'll do, and I'm only doing this a couple days a week, is I'll drink a big glass of that water on an empty stomach. And then only about once a month will I shoot it up my butt and do a little ozone water enema. But that's a lot different than the type of rectal ozone therapy that you're doing. You're not just like shooting ozonated water up your butt, right?
No. I wish I could do what you do once a month. That would be nice. Now, what I do is I actually have a machine that You hook up to an oxygen tank, and it creates ozone gas, and you put it into a plastic bladder, and then you attach it to a catheter, which you stick up your nether regions, and then you just squeeze the gas out, and you hold it in for, you know, 20 minutes, whatever you can. And because it's, you know, you have a lot of assimilative capacity blood vessels in your colon, if that's a word, you know, this ozone actually gets into your system pretty effectively. And it's also near the prostate, which is kind of a blessing for me.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So you do the ozonated enemas, or the ozonated, you called it a sufflation machine?
Insul. It's insufflation. Okay. It's rectal insufflation.
Rectal insufflation.
Yeah. And you can buy these machines for like $500 or $600.
Okay. And in addition to that, another thing that I think you mentioned, there was something else in addition to the ozone. So far you've talked about the nystatin antifungal, right, hyperbaric oxygen, ozone therapy, therapeutic, right, not nutritional ketosis, looking into deuterium depleted water, Of course, we talked about the emotional component as well. What are some of the other big wins that you've found in terms of managing this thing? And then after you go into that, I want to hear about your, I guess some people will call it claims, right? That you've cured yourself of cancer, you know, like how, you know, like what's actually happened that can prove to you that this stuff is effective.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. That's a nice way to kind of wrap all this stuff back. Let me tell you, I did use standard of care. I did use androgen deprivation therapy, which is also called chemical castration. And that's kind of all the standard of care doctors really said, well, that's the best we can do is we're going to just shut down your body's production of testosterone. I mean, really shut it down. So it's zero. You're producing zero testosterone because that's something that can starve the cancer. And so my cancer, allopathic medicine is extremely effective at addressing acute conditions. And my cancer, I thought, was far enough along to have some acute elements that I didn't want to just go alternative. I wanted to use some standard of care. But I'm not sure. It's hard to say how impactful that was. It really is. Because before you start these shots, which you can do semi-annually once every 6 months, or you can do every 3 months, quarterly, or you can do monthly. And I opted for monthly because I wanted to cycle off as soon as I could, because I was worried about how that would impact the rest of the function of your body. Can you imagine having no testosterone at all in your system? I mean, none.
No. What is it that you're using to chemically castrate yourself?
It's called Lupron is the brand name. I'm not sure exactly what the chemical name is or the pharmaceutical name is. And there are different versions of Lupron. But it's a shot you get. It's an intramuscular shot. You know, the needle's the size of a horse needle, and you do it. I was doing it monthly, but it's interesting. Before you actually get your first Lupron shot, they put you on a pill called Casodex, which turns off your receptors for testosterone. The reason they do that is because when you get your first Lupron shot, you get a spike in testosterone, and they don't want that because it could really fuel the growth of cancer. Okay. And so they have you taking the Casodex shots for, say, 2 weeks before you get your first shot. And so I got my very first Lupron shot. And I had my blood taken the day I got that shot. And my PSA level, when I got it tested, when I first was diagnosed, was 21.1, which is far in excess of where you want to be. I mean, they say over 10 is likelihood of cancer. And I was at 21.1. When I got my next PSA test was done when I got blood taken the day I got my first Lupron shot. Now, granted, I had been taking Casodex for about 2 weeks. My PSA level had dropped to 1.86. The day I got that, so the Lupron had nothing to do with it because I got the test blood taken before I got the Lupron put in my system. My monthly blood test the following month was down to 0.23. And since then, and I cycled off the Lupron 2.5-3 months ago, it's been 0.05. Now, I'm not saying I'll never take Lupron again or I'm completely out of the woods. I'm kind of jumping to the conclusion here. But I did see a significant decline, which I think the doctor's face would probably say this is not usual, in my PSA levels. And I attribute a lot of that to my protocols.
How is it that that would actually shut down PSA?
Well, I think it just closes down your prostate. I mean, I also have...
wouldn't be something you would necessarily do, like if you had colon cancer or breast cancer, specifically for the prostate.
You only prostate. Exactly.
Okay, got it.
Exactly. But now let's talk about some of the other treatment therapies, which obviously chemotherapy was pushed on me and I said no. Radiology was pushed on me. Of course, the radiologist wants you to do radiologist. The oncologist wants you to do chemotherapy. And oh, by the way, a lot of people don't know this. Oncology is the only branch of medicine where the doctor not only prescribes but sells you the drugs. In other words, every other branch of medicine, to my knowledge, you go to see a doctor, they write a prescription, and then a pharmacist would fill the prescription.
Right.
But there's I'm not saying oncologists do anything that's out of line with trying to do the best for their patients, but there's a misalignment of incentives when you have, you know, that huge profit center because they, you know, they buy the drug for $600, they sell it to your insurance company for $5,000 or $6,000. But anyway, so I decided I didn't want to do chemotherapy because I felt like it was far too aggressive and I was worried about the impact it would have on other functions and cells in my body. But I did want to do some sort of both supporting my immune system and some toxicology, which would be, I guess, considered more natural version of chemotherapy. I couldn't come up with a lot. There's not a lot out there. There is B17, which you may know about, you know, which are from apricot pits, believe it or not. And you can buy those in some, you know, very fancy health food stores, but they'll say on an aid or talk to your doctor before you need this because it's very toxic. But it's very toxic to cancer cells, and it's really not that toxic.
And it's called B17?
It's vitamin B17, right, and it's found in apricot pits. You can also take it as a supplement, too.
And it's considered to be a toxin?
It's completely a toxin, yes.
Okay, and so kind of also, similar to how like almonds have a toxin in them, these pits or these, what is it, what did you say it's a pit of, a peach?
Apricot.
An apricot,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember when you were a kid, they say don't eat the apple seeds because they have arsenic in it. I think a lot of fruit seeds have, you know, these, but they're really not toxic to a healthy cell. Now they may say if you're pregnant or you're, you know, you have an immune, you know, some problem with pneumonia or something, you shouldn't be eating this stuff because you have a compromised immune system, whatever. But I think for purposes of addressing chronic disease like cancer, you would want to hit it with everything you could. I mean, it's a really multimodal approach. Another one is artesanate, which I get by IV injection every week, which is a derivative of the wormwood tree that also has kind of a toxicological effect. It's used for other ailments. It's only been used for cancer recently. And then there's kind of all the immunotherapy stuff that you want to do. You know, glutathione, high-dose vitamin C, Iscador, also called mistletoe or viscum, which primarily used in Germany, but it's an anthracycline-based medicine that helps fire up your immune system. These are all, there's a ton of these kind of treatment protocols. And I was doing all, everything I could fit into my schedule.
I want to ask you about those antioxidants in a second, but just to backpedal for a second, those toxins, the apricot pit B17 based toxin and the wormwood toxin. And by the way, like wormwood grows like weed on my property out here. There's a ton of it. For shutting down cancer, do those toxins have an effect on other parts of your body? Like, do you feel crappy when you use that stuff? And why not if it's a toxin?
Because it's not affecting your healthy cells. It does not affect your healthy cells.
So it'll only affect cancerous cells.
Correct. Yes, cells that have defective mitochondria is the way I like to look at it.
Interesting. It's so fascinating how plant-based medicines like that can be selective. That's really interesting. And you're using antioxidants as well.
I am. And I actually, it's interesting because that same podcast you referenced at the beginning of this one about my shake, I think you had a piece in there about pod arco tea.
Yeah, nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. I've got a big pitcher of the stuff in my refrigerator. Like I drink it every day. I feel like a rock star. I go through like 8 ounces of it a day.
That came up in several of the books I read that talked about alternative kind of more herbal, you know, cancer treatments. And so I decided to adopt that. And I use your version of it with the sunflower lecithin and the Ceylon cinnamon. And I also put in 2 teaspoons of organic turmeric powder. And I do that with some brain octane. And I do that and drink it with all of my supplements. So when I do my stack of supplements, I drink it with that tea. Because I think it has, you know.
Yeah, it makes a ton of stuff more bioavailable. And that's exactly what I do. A ton of turmeric. I started adding black pepper to it. You blend it up with something like sunflower lecithin or some other fat source. And this is all from a guy who we mentioned earlier in the show, Dr. Mercola, who I consider to be one of my most valuable mentors when it comes to managing my mitochondria. The dude is a wealth of information. He introduced this recipe to me. And I drink it like it's going out of style. And by the way, if you're listening in and you want that recipe, it's actually on the same blog post where I published Eric's shake recipe. So just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest to cure cancer. And I'll put that in the resources section that you can find there. But you're basically doing that, Eric, along with you said glutathione.
Well, I do glutathione intravenously. I do IV glutathione with high dose vitamin C. I'm doing 75 grams intravenously.
Not at the same time as the glutathione.
No, I do the glutathione on day one, and I do the artesanate and high dose vitamin C. I do on day two.
Right. I was going to say the vitamin C I believe it creates too acidic an environment for glutathione to survive. So you got to split the two up.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So this is a lot of stuff that you do. I mean, obviously, if I had cancer, man, I mean, first thing I would do, honestly, is not to sound like I'm tooting my own horn. I would go to the resources list for everything that we're talking about right now, because this is exactly the kind of things the practical advice I wanted to dig into. But before we move on, you know, after mentioning the glutathione and the vitamin C injections, are there any other big wins that you wanted to make sure that you mentioned that you feel were like super crucial for you?
Well, I would say that, there's so many avenues I could go on this. Sunlight to me is absolutely crucial. Access to sunlight on a regular basis is absolutely crucial. Without vitamin D, and that's the best source of it, your body cannot produce GCMAF, which is a regulatory protein that supports your immune system and activates macrophages. And GCMAF, yes. It's part of your immune system, and it's necessary for shutting down in those cells that could potentially become cancers or they're no longer functioning the way they should. And so, that's an area that's kind of a little bit testy, only because the federal government and the European, some of the governments in England, I think, not all governments, I think Japan and Germany, they use GCMAF as a cancer treatment. But, they literally are trying to do their best to prevent anybody from having access to it. And I'm not sure exactly why that's the case. Nageles is what causes the cells to not be, they say, I think it's a little misleading to say that it prevents your cancer cells from being detected by your immune system. Your Nageles levels checked when you go see a functional doctor. But I think
what are you calling it? Nageles?
Nageles, Nagalese. I think perhaps a more accurate statement is that if GCMAF is there, it'll attack your cancer cells, but Nageles will impact or impair the ability of your body to produce GCMAF.
Okay, and when you get exposed to sunlight, that somehow modifies your vitamin D to allow you to produce more of your natural levels of GCMAF?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And there are other ways you can do it.
Did you get like a tanning bed, or are you just doing sunshine?
No, I actually have. I'm fortunate. I live in Southern California, and I have a little tanning deck where I can lay out like you do sometimes, completely naked, and get as much sun as I can. And so I do that on any sunny day when I'm, when I'm at home, I'll do that for at least 20 minutes just to make sure I'm getting my sunlight, my vitamin D levels up. And I obviously supplement on top of that as well.
Right.
There's a lot more we can get into, and I know we don't have time for everything, but I did want to circle back to your original question is kind of how you know if you're cured or not. And I think the answer is there's really two answers here. One is no one's ever completely out of the woods. Everyone has cancer cells being produced in the body all the time. It's just that the difference between my body and your body is your body's managing it quite well. Mine, for whatever reason, hasn't been. And so what I want to do is get back into that managing quite well stage, which is what we talked about, cancering versus healing. And so I don't like to use the word cure. I like to use the word managing, or, it's just my body's now in a healing state. And the way I know that is I have, obviously my PSA levels are a good indicator that it's not, it's completely shut down, because that's the only indicator they have for prostate cancer, not for other cancers. Mm-hmm. And I also had my urologist do an ultrasound and a digital exam, and he was shocked. He was absolutely shocked when he said, your lymph nodes look perfectly normal. Your prostate feels perfectly normal. Everything looks perfectly fine. There's no indication anywhere in your groin area that there's anything cancerous going on down there.
Was he surprised?
He was very surprised. Now, I think an MRI is going to help support that, and I'm scheduled to have an MRI done next month. Give it a couple months after I'm out of the woods before I actually put myself through another MRI.
Right.
Everything is functioning the way it is. I feel great, other than the surgery I had on Friday, which I told you about early in the call, for my hernia.
Yeah.
You
mentioned that before we started recording. You got a hernia. Was that just from training or from yoga pants too tight?
This is it burns me up, Ben. It burns me up. I had a lymph node removed 20 years ago when I was still, I just moved to Los Angeles in 1995. And the reason why I had the lymph node removed is because, remember early on in the conversation, I was talking about how I had been on this exercise kick And I became a gym rat, and I went from being kind of skinny fat to being muscle tone.
And yeah, I think you were telling me when we were in Costa Rica, you were spending like 90 minutes to 2 hours in the gym, like every day.
I went to the gym for 90 minutes every single day. And I was eating nothing but kind of high protein, low fat, you know, this
right.
Myoplex shakes after
yeah. You were on the Men's Fitness Magazine workout.
I was definitely doing the Men's Fitness Magazine workout to the T. And as a result of that fact, I lost so much body weight that I noticed two spots in my groin area, in my pelvic region, where I had lymph nodes. They were nothing wrong with them, but I hadn't noticed them before because I always had body fat there. And of course, being a little bit obsessive about this sort of thing, I kept pointing it out to my doctor. What is this? And first time I pointed out, he said, well, those are your lymph nodes. If you never noticed them before, they might be swollen. We should check those out because you might have lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And initially I just said, oh, you're nuts. 6 months later, I was seeing him for something else. I don't remember what it was, a flu shot, whatever it was. And he said, so did you ever get your lymph nodes checked? I said, no. He said, look, if you don't have them checked, you're going to die. If you have lymphoma, if we catch it early, we can save your life. And so back then, of course, I hadn't even discovered Chinese medicine or anything else. I was completely sold on Western medicine. And so I had him put me on a gurney, and they put me out, and they removed the lymph node from my groin, because I don't know, that's how they did it back then. And they said, oh, no, it's a perfectly healthy lymph node. Well, guess what? You're now short one lymph node. And by the way, you have a hole in your fascia, in your muscle sheath, in your groin area. So fast forward 20 years later, when you're doing all these ozone insufflation, coffee enema stuff,
right?
Guess your intestines are looking for an exit. Guess what they're going to find?
Oh, no. So it's not like you punctured a hole in yourself with like an enema tube or something like that. They just got out from a weak spot.
Right where I had that lymph node removed. There was a weak spot there. That was so, two surgeries, completely unnecessary.
Wow. That's crazy.
Unnecessary.
So you had the hernia issue, but now you're just back to, you're back to your normal workout routine.
Once I get fully healed, I will be. Yes. Okay. I'm going to shut down for 4 weeks, but that's
fine. Okay. Gotcha. So PSA is down. You're going to get an MRI to show for a fact that you actually have gotten this thing completely into remission.
Correct. All my symptoms are zero. So symptomologically, it's completely zero.
Okay. So you've logged this whole process over at this Quest to Cure Cancer website. And I know that's one thing that you definitely mentioned to me you wanted to tell people about on the show. So tell me what you're doing on that.
Okay. Yeah, this is something that by the time this is actually published, this podcast, hopefully it'll be up and running because I'm working diligently on it now. But what I want to do is I've spent a considerable amount of time and energy and brain power, not only prior to getting cancer, just by virtue of my passion for wellness, but really since then, doing a deep dive. And I want to make this information useful and available to others who either are facing that diagnosis or are trying to avoid that diagnosis. Because a lot of these protocols, you know, there's a certain amount of these protocols that are just generally healthy, just keep your mitochondria functioning the way it should, and, you know, keep your immune system functioning the way it should, so you never have to go down this path. And so my goal is to kind of create that site. And I also want to have a Facebook community, which, by the way, I didn't have a Facebook page until a couple months ago when I decided to build a site. So I'm the last person who understands what Facebook is. But I do want to have a place people can go to kind of interact with one another, ask questions, get a better sense for what's working and what's not. I think one of the things that people face when initially confronting these issues is, do I just follow the advice I'm given by one doctor? Do I need to talk to my friends? Can I rely on someone else who has had a good result to think that I can have that good result? I mean, there's just a ton of questions.
Right.
That you're going to have to kind of get comfortable with. And my goal really is to just create a resource for those who want to take charge of their healing process, or at least be active in the process, right? You know, find doctors who you can work with, and really find protocols that work for you, and, you know, get yourself back into that healing state, because it's, you know, it's cancering is just part of the normal human process. You got to get the management of that back to where it should be.
And so this Quest to Cure Cancer, it's not like something people have to necessarily pay for to access. It's just like free advice that you're putting out there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm way too early in the process to even think about what it's going to ultimately turn into. And so initially it's all just going to be free. I just want to get it out there. And then later on, I don't know, maybe I can figure out some way of having a membership for people that really want to kind of get more hands on or one-on-one or deeper dive, that sort of thing.
It's
early in the process. I think, the goal here is just to kind of get it out there.
And honestly, I'm glad you're doing it because I mean, the things that not only you've mentioned on this podcast, but that you were talking to me about down in Costa Rica. I mean, you really, I think, have kind of like combined your ability to see the big picture as an attorney. And then also those 20 years you spent geeking out on health before you found out that you had cancer. And then what you've discovered since then. I mean, you have kind of this unique, well-informed approach that I wanted to make sure people know about when it comes to being able to manage something like this in a pretty natural way. But obviously you're open to modern medicine as well. I mean, you're using like nystatin, you chemically castrated yourself. I mean, you're one of those guys who's into more than just like, say like juicing and ketosis. So, I really appreciate your perspective on this. And I'm sure folks listening in are probably going to have questions. And, Eric, I know you're a podcast listener. You're probably familiar with the show notes and stuff like that. But, if people wanted to leave questions on or comments in the show notes, are you willing to pop on there and point people in the right direction?
I would be happy to do that, Ben.
Okay.
It would be my honor to be able to do that. I think the more feedback I can get from your audience, eventually have my own podcast just focusing on cancer. And the people that I would have on there would be, you know, the usual suspects. But I would have experts on hyperbaric oxygen or, you know what I mean? Or Nageli's GCNF, just so people who want to really kind of get into the weeds have the ability to do that. Cause that's what I'm doing. Why not just push a record button while I do it?
Yeah, no, it'd be a super cool resource. I definitely think so. You know, get like Dr. Mercola and Dr. Minkoff and Dominic D'Agostino and a lot of these folks on there. I think it'd be really cool and specifically have them talk about cancer. So, I've been taking notes like mad. So, all the different books that we recommended, honestly, I'll put all the previous podcasts that I also have done on cancer. Not only the one I mentioned with, Dr. Mercola and Dr. Minkoff, but also I interviewed this guy, speaking of the emotional causes for cancer, this professional basketball player when I was over in Israel. I sat down in his back garden and interviewed him in Northern Galilee. And he talked a lot about emotional causes for cancer and kind of like, you know, the process of letting go of a lot of your underlying negative beliefs and negative emotions and pent up bitterness and anger and setting things right with people that you love. And, you know, all these things that I think are just as important as, you know, any amount of like, you know, ozone up the butt or anything else. And I'll link to that podcast and a lot of the other podcasts and blog posts that I've done on cancer, because it really is, I think, a fairly misunderstood disease and something that people can manage in a lot more intelligent way and in a way that goes above and beyond just the pure radiation and chemotherapy that modern medicine has to offer if they know how to navigate these pathways. So if you're listening in, all the show notes over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest-to-cure-cancer. I know we said some things during this podcast that you might disagree with, but please be nice if you get on there. You know, I'm pretty open-minded. I pretty much publish any comment anybody leaves unless you've got like some product you're too heavily trying to push or something like that, or you have like some kind of an obvious agenda, or if it's just pure spam and you're trying to sell Nikes from Taiwan. Other than that though, I'll publish your comment and we'll also get discussion going around it. So bengreenfieldfitness.com/quest-to-cure-cancer is where you can go for that. And Eric, thank you for coming on the show and so generously sharing all this stuff with us, man.
Thank you, Ben, for giving me this opportunity. And, I love what you do. So keep doing what you do. I'm excited to hear about your new venture too.
Oh yeah, dude, for sure. I'll be filling the whole world in on it. Hopefully very soon, maybe even before this podcast is released. So in the meantime, everybody, thank you for listening in. And I'm Ben Greenfield along with Eric Remensberger signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com. Have a healthy week.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.